Good afternoon again, and a greeting to those who are online as well. It's not a shock if we turn to Matthew 18 today and look at the first few verses. In Matthew 18, let's look at the first few verses that'll set the tone for what we're going to examine. In Matthew 18, starting at verse 1, at the time disciples came to Jesus saying, "Who then is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" Verse 2, and Jesus called a little child to him, set him in the midst of them, and said, "Assuredly, I say to you, unless you're converted and become as a little children, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven. Therefore, whoever humbles himself like this little child is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Whoever receives one little child like this in my name receives me. But whoever causes one of these little ones to believe in me to sin, it would be better for him if a millstone were hung around his neck and he were drowned in the depth of the sea. Woe to the world because of offenses, for offenses must come, but woe to the man by whom the offense comes." We see a focus in this verse that children are critically important. Their attitude, their willingness to learn, and you'll notice it's talking about the concept of humility here with regard to that's the kind of humility that we need to have if we expect to enter the kingdom of heaven. So you can see what's on Jesus' mind here when he's explaining this to his disciples. And we go to Matthew 19, then starting in verse 13. And so in the next chapter in this sequence, Matthew 19, starting in verse 13, then little children were brought to him, that's Jesus, that he might put his hands on them and pray. But the disciples rebuked them. And Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me. Do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." And he laid his hands on them and departed from there. You see, these verses in Matthew 18 and 19, Jesus seriously valued little children. But if we take a look at a deeper meaning on these verses, we can ask ourselves this question. What was Jesus trying to teach his disciples? Well, the Bible is filled with examples of teaching the principles of God, of how people can benefit then from following the laws of God, as we've heard in the sermonette. But what principle was Jesus teaching in these two closely timed scenarios? Well, the title of today's message is Teaching Empathy. Teaching Empathy. A few years ago, when Amazon had started its Amazon Prime promotion, they had issued a press release, and about how much stuff people purchased in different categories on their Prime Day promotion. Of course, they want people to order, to commit to paying a fee in order to get reduced or cheap freight. So they were saying on Prime Day, this promotion, 90,000 televisions were sold. This was 2018. 2 million toys, 1 million pairs of shoes, 200,000 headphones, and then 215,000 Instapots on Prime Day. And you say, well, what's up with that? Well, the question then becomes, if we're looking at this example, a tiny company that had no marketing, it built the number one selling product on Amazon. How in the world do you sell $14.8 million worth of stuff in one day without any advertising? Well, in Inc. magazine, they pose that question. In the Foundation for Economics Education, of which I'm a member, there was an interesting article that explained how this happens, how a little company was able to sell over $200 million worth of stuff. And in Foundation for Economic Education, the article said in 2008, Dr. Wang, a Chinese immigrant to Canada with a PhD in computer science, was laid off from his job. With his savings of $350,000 and the help of two other engineers, he founded a company called DoubleSight. The future would hold profit or loss, they just didn't know. But in 18 months, they invented the Instant Pot. And this particular experience caused them to understand that successful entrepreneurs, business people that build something, they have empathy for the consumer. In his book, Wired to Care, a business strategy advisor, Dave Patniak, argued that the secret of innovation is empathy. Success requires businesses to leave their own other ideas and agendas behind and actually care about how other people see the world. Jeff Booth, the CEO of a company called BuildDirect, said the highest expression of empathy is addressing customer needs before they even realize that they're aware of them. He said, when you can step into your customer's shoes and see the world from their perspective and not yours, it's easier to walk miles ahead of the competition. Well, what has that got to do with little children? Well, let's follow along. The inventor of the Instapot, Dr. Wang, knew the secret of business success was empathy. And it was empathy, not greed, he said, is the essence of an entrepreneurial mindset that fosters innovation to meet the needs of customers. So if you think of the motivation for empathy this way, it's like an if-then statement. If I do this, then there will be good results. And I like good results. Now, I think it was about 40 years ago, author W. Cleon Skousen wrote a book, 5,000 Year Leap. It's been quite a few years since I read that book. But he noted that from 5,000 years of recorded human history, people obtained wealth by taking stuff from other people. And we have that history of people conquering other people so they could take their stuff. And that has been going on for the history of humanity. In 1776, there was a Scottish economist named Adam Smith. He wrote a book called Wealth of Nations. You might have studied this when you went to school. And he argued that and explained that the free market exchange of goods and services was absolutely critical to build wealth. His philosophy, Adam Smith's philosophy, was at the coincided with the birth of a new nation called the United States of America. Smith's economic philosophy was well received in this new nation. And with the birth of the USA and its new economic system, people began to gain wealth, not by taking things from other people, but by serving the needs and wants of other people. Well, using the philosophy of serving the needs and wants of others, the United States has gone on to become the wealthiest nation in world history. About 30 years ago, I followed an author and a motivational speaker named Zig Ziglar. You may have heard of him, he's deceased now. And he said, you can get everything you want if you help enough other people get what they want. The principle of empathy by Zig Ziglar, W. Cleon Skousen, and Dr. Wang is not a new principle. Indeed, the principle of serving the needs of others is thousands of years old, and it's written in the book we call the Bible, and the principle of empathy is essential for Christians. So as we then study this subject about teaching empathy, I'm going to suggest that empathy is not automatic. Empathy does not just happen. Empathy must be learned. The Oxford Dictionary says empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. Ever know some callous people? They don't care, or they don't know, and they don't care they don't know. And they don't understand, and they don't share the feelings of other people. They don't have empathy. The Merriam-Webster Dictionary says empathy is an action of understanding, of being aware or being sensitive to and vicariously experiencing feelings, thoughts, and experiences of another, either past or present. So basically, empathy is understanding the feelings of others, which is related to compassion. Compassion is the understanding of the feelings of others and then move to action. If you're going to show compassion, you usually hear it by showing compassion. I want to turn to Matthew 7:12, because here you have an expression that really has helped to explain empathy without using the word empathy. In Matthew 7:12, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is of the law and the prophets." Sounds a lot like the golden rule, doesn't it? Now, we read through Matthew 18 about Jesus setting a little child in the middle of his disciples and saying, you know, whoever receives this child like this in my name receives me. And then we read Matthew 19 about the little children that were brought to Jesus, and he put his hands on them and prayed. But interestingly, in Matthew 19, verse 13, the last half of the verse said, "But the disciples rebuked them." They pushed the children back. And Jesus said, "Let the little children come to me. Do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven." And he placed his, laid his hands on them and departed from there. You see, who is standing in the way of the little children coming to Jesus Christ? It was his own disciples who he had been teaching, who should be learning these things. Years ago, as a high school teacher, I was appointed to serve on a special faculty committee that was set up by my school district. The committee was to examine how to teach and reinforce the concept of compassion to students. I thought this was a great idea. Wow, we'll just teach students compassion. And I listened quietly. I was appointed as one of the few faculty members on how to design this. And the goal of teaching compassion, I thought, well, that's admirable. However, what I came to realize is that during the meeting that the promoters were attempting to outline a path to teach compassion while absent the knowledge of God. The administrators were absent the recognition that the laws of God were essential to the well-being and happiness of mankind. The promoters of the compassion agenda were attempting to instill values in a world that didn't have absolutes. In the world, absolutes are like nailing jello to a tree. Really, really hard to do. You can't pin them down on something. But the administrators that were to that committee, they came up with 4 points. I suspect that they never realized that those 4 points would be the basis of a sermon of true Christianity. And the first point on these four principles, and number one, we'll have 2 sub-points. Point one is treat everyone as we would wish to be treated. And we read in Matthew 7:12, that version of the golden rule, what you want people to do to you, you also do for them. In Luke 6:31, this is similarly stated, "And just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise." Now, do you do something for other people just to get something yourself? Actually, what did Jesus say to the little children? He said, "Let them come to me. Don't block them." So we have this, he's telling his disciples, followers, that you have to keep your arms open and the doors open for people who are new in the faith, not just infants, but metaphorically people who are new in the church. And because at one point, each one of us was new. Each one of us was brand new and didn't understand the truths of God. And so, what if people would have blocked our way? What if people would have made it difficult for us? We don't want to do that to others. In Matthew 22, and verses 34 through 40, and it's mirrored in Mark, the book of Mark, chapter 12, but in Matthew 22, verses 34 through 40, and this is where the Pharisees, in verse 34, the Pharisees heard he had silenced the Sadducees. They gathered together. Well, how do you silence somebody? Well, you embarrass them with the truth is one thing, and they don't know what to say. 35, one of them, the Pharisees, a lawyer, asked him a question, testing him and saying, "Teacher, what is the greatest commandment in the law?" And this is verse 37. Jesus said, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." So he's summarizing it all right there. Then we jump to Romans 13, verses 8 and 9. In Romans, and Paul's letter to the Romans here, Owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments are, and he goes through, don't commit adultery, don't murder, shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, shall not covet. And if there's any other commandment, they're saying up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. So what was Jesus trying to teach the disciples? He was trying to teach them, don't stop the little children from coming to me, meaning not just the babies or the little ones, the infants, but anybody by extension who is interested in the truth, interested in the faith. If they want to learn more, welcome them in. So point one, that the administrators, the school administrators, was treat everyone as we would wish to be treated. I don't know that any of them went to church anywhere for anything or ever cracked a Bible, but they somehow came up with this, how to teach compassion. So treat others as we would wish to be treated. That sounded good to me. Then they had a sub-point, and this were real big on helping those around us who are in need. That sounds pretty biblical, right? Helping those around us who are in need. And if we look at Matthew 25, and there's this story in verses 31 through 40. In Matthew 25, verses 31 through 40. And this is where in judgment, and Jesus was separating the sheep from the goats. And he was saying, inherit the kingdom, verse 34. Prepared for you from the foundation of the world. I was hungry, you gave me food. I was thirsty, you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. And verse 37, he said, well, wait a minute. When did we do all of this stuff? Because they may have never actually done it, okay, to Jesus, because they didn't know. But they said, what did he say? Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. I do notice, and we might want to put a little asterisk there, he said, the brethren. It didn't say, everybody in the whole world, you have to go and polish their shoes, pump up their bicycle tires, and take care of them. He was talking about how you treat your brethren. How you treat people in the church is that you give special regard to them, to take care of them. And then in James 1, in verse 27, we hear this from time to time in James 1:27. Pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. It doesn't say visit orphans and widows, well, and acknowledge their difficulty, tell them to be warmed and fed and move on your way. It says to help them in their troubles. In Philippians 2:4 we read, Philippians 2:4, let each of you look out not only for his own interest, but also for the interest of others. Notice what was said first. Not only for your own interest. In other words, you need to look out for your own interests. Don't disregard what you need, but because that puts you in a better position to be able to help the interest of other people. And in Luke 6:38, it explains what our help can look like. Give, in Luke 6:38, give and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over, will be put into your bosom. Even for the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And it reminds me of the farmer who shorts himself on the seed. He says, well, I want a big crop, but I don't want to put that much seed in the ground. It will cost too much. So he doesn't sow enough seed on the ground. And then he wonders why he gets a small crop. It's in FFA, Future Farmers of America, in high school. So I told my dad, we need to experiment. Instead of planting 15, 16,000 corn plants per acre, I'm studying in high school, and they said it's a possibility that if we raise the number of plants per acre, we can increase the yield dramatically. So I said, how about 28,000 plants per acre and see what that does? And so a corn stalk every few inches instead of a foot apart, which was unheard of before that. So I tried that, and it worked out really well. The better you sow, the more you're going to to read. So looking after ourselves would provide a bigger yield than so that we'd be in a better position to help others. And it's that way in all parts of life. And so in Galatians 6, 2, it's bear one another's burdens, so fulfill the law of Christ. Being able to step in, help where we can. Proverbs in 19:17, he who has pity on the poor lends to the Lord, and he will pay back what he has been given. So it's a good thing to be able to help. Now, in Economics and Personal Finance, I also play videos by John Stossel. And what he did is he did a comparison of what happens when you have a beggar on the street corner. We've all seen them. And they're all got their little cardboard sign out wanting some money. So what he did is he dressed up like the beggar, put his little cardboard sign, stood on the street corner to see how much money he could get per hour. And he could make a certain amount of money per hour. Then he changed the sign to a different reading and says, I need money for alcohol, I'm not going to lie, please help. And he found out he got just as much money per hour with that sign as he did. And then he also then interviewed the people that were the beggars and found out it was their choice for a lifestyle, that they didn't want to fit into the mainstream. So we don't want to be enablers of that sort of thing. And the Bible isn't telling us to be enablers. It's primarily directing us to helping the brethren here. And in John 15, 12, this is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. That's really what we are about, is being able to love the brethren. I'm almost through with part 1A. In James 2, 14 through 17, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of food, and somebody says, depart in peace, be warmed and filled, but you don't give them the things which are needed, what does it profit them? And so, notice here this verse 15, it says, if your brother or sister, it doesn't say every single person you come across, because we would exhaust our own resources. It wouldn't work that way. And it closes up in verse 17, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. So you've got to demonstrate that by being willing to help the brothers and sisters in Christ. So the point 1A is helping those around us who are in need. Now, the administrators then had 1.1B. And I found this was very much in line with the Bible, is be willing to make amends when we cause another person pain. Well, that's pretty good, be willing to make amends. In Ephesians 4:26, we read, be angry and do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your wrath. In other words, there's a place and a time for anger. God certainly got angry. Jesus got angry. But it says, resolve the issues. Take care of business so that you can make amends. In Matthew 21, starting in verse 21, it's about how often should we forgive somebody? And of course, seven times was the question. And Jesus said seven times, up to 70 times seven. It's really the attitude of willingness. Willingness to make amends. So we have this this concept of not just helping those who are in need, but willing to make amends. The second point that they wanted us to teach, all this was teaching it absent the Bible, and yet it fits right in with the biblical background. Step into the shoes of others and see how things look from their point of view, especially when we disagree or in conflict. Step into the shoes of others and see how things look from their point of view. In John 15, verse 13. John 15, 13, I'm going to read this in the English Standard Version. Greater love has no one than this, than someone lay down his life for his friends. That's precisely what Jesus did, is he laid down his life for those who are willing to follow him. That's a lot. How many people would we be willing to lay our life down for? John 3:16, perhaps the most popular verse in churchianity. I call it churchianity because they don't follow all the other precepts of God. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. And verse 17, for God didn't send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. See, God, those verses start, God so loved the world. And so he wants things to work out for people. But to do that, okay, Jesus was willing to lay down his life. So what was Jesus trying to tell his disciples? To teach the children? We're looking at teaching empathy here. And in 1 Corinthians 11:1, here's the principle. Imitate me, this is Paul writing to the Corinthians, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. You see, children imitate the adults. That's how they learn. For better or worse, they will imitate the adults. So point two was, step into the shoes of others and see how things look from their point of view. Point three, that I was told for teaching compassion, to make our environment a place where everyone feels welcome. Oh, that's a good idea. Wow. Well, in a school environment, that's really hard to do because they're all forced to be there. And so there are going to be people that don't want other people to, you know, they want to express themselves in a hostile manner. We call them bullies. In Ephesians 4:29, in the English Standard Version, let no corrupt talk come out of your mouths, but only such as is good for building up, as fits the occasion, that it may give grace to those who hear. I was about 12 years old, starting junior high school. This was a few decades ago, okay, more than a few. And there was a bully. For some reason, I was one of his favorite targets. And maybe all of you have experienced this somewhere along the way. And I didn't want to fight back with the guy at school. So I went and talked to the school counselor. Incidentally, his name was Mr. Hurt. And I talked to Mr. Hurt, and he said, what I want you to do is to compliment the bully and then ask him for help. And I'm thinking to myself, are you just flat out nuts? Are you crazy? Do you have any idea how difficult this person has been? And he went on to explain that bullies don't feel valued. And as a result, they act out. They don't focus on their education. You don't find people that have a higher vocabulary tend not to be bullies. And so he said, so if you can find a way to compliment him, he said, because nobody else is. You'll be special and you won't get bullied. I couldn't figure out anything to compliment this guy. But after high school, went off to college, got a job, moved away. 30 years later, I go back to my hometown, and I wanted to see, I own a property, and I went down to the courthouse to see, to the county clerk's office about my appraisal and the tax bill. And while I was there, it's the courthouse, I poked my head in the courtroom. And wouldn't you know it, there I saw my junior high school bully, standing before a judge. And the judge was giving him the what for. Apparently, he had finally reached, when he was in his, 40-something, early 40s, he had finally reached the limit, and he was going to go spend time in the cooler. Because he didn't hit the limits, he never felt valued, and probably because he didn't do anything of value, and made life hard for other people, but I remembered that, and I thought, wow, how different his life would have been if he would have read 1 Thessalonians 5:11. In 1 Thessalonians 5:11, and of course, I was, 12 years old at the time, and I can't say that I had read 1 Thessalonians 5:11. The counselor probably had, that I went to Mr. Hurd. Therefore, encourage one another and build up one another just as you are doing. Paul wrote to the Thessalonians, said, encourage one another, build each other up. What do you suppose Jesus was telling his disciples when the little children were rebuked or were pushed back? Would he much rather that they be encouraging, building one another up, and not pushing the little children back? In Ephesians 4:2, Paul also wrote, in Ephesians 4:2, again in the English Standard Version, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love. Being patient with one another. Notice the words humility and gentleness. It doesn't mean that I just thought of the best smart remark I could use to put that bully in his place. Now, that isn't to say there isn't a time and a place for that, but humility and gentleness and patience is critical. And there are other similar verses, Titus 3:2, about speaking evil of no one. Avoid quarreling, be gentle, show perfect courtesy toward all people. Wow, can you imagine what kind of world this would be if everybody didn't speak evil of anyone, to avoid quarreling, be gentle, and show perfect courtesy to all people. Wow. Just think, if we even had that for 1 minute in the whole world, how that would change the whole world, those things. Because a soft answer, as we know, turns away wrath, Proverbs 15:1, and a harsh word stirs up anger. So the obvious thing to do for most people is to respond like we've been treated. Okay? But we're in Proverbs 25:15. In Proverbs 25:15, with patience, a ruler may be persuaded. A soft tongue will break a bone. In other words, your words can be very, very powerful. They can be very positive. Even the ruler of a city, a country, or an empire can be persuaded by using a soft tongue. What was Jesus trying to tell the disciples about the little children? He gave them, said, you know, if you want to be in the kingdom, you've got to have an attitude like these little children. So point three was make our environment a place where everyone feels welcome. Point four, to teach empathy and compassion, to respond then to others with kindness, to imagine a better, more compassionate world. Responding with kindness. In Ephesians 4:32, we read about being kind to one another, tender-hearted, forgiving, as God in Christ forgave you. Can you imagine if every time we got injured for anything, any scratch, any bruise, that it never healed? Never, ever healed. Every little thing that has ever happened and it never healed. What would our bodies be like? I know I had a lot of crashes and burns when I was a kid. I was just learning the bicycle. Okay? Falling down a ladder, a scratch. What if they never healed? Well, they just was not built in to heal. And if we read in Proverbs 11:17, a man who is kind benefits himself, but a cruel man hurts himself. If we never healed physically, we would carry that hurt with us and life would be miserable. It's the same way for our behavior. If those disciples would have continued to act that way, chasing away the children, blocking them from coming to Christ, it didn't benefit the disciples. It was a hurt to the children. They need the healing and the love that Jesus wanted to give them and to teach them. But the people that were chasing them away, you might say they were cruel. They were hurting themselves and the children. Now, of course, you're wondering when I'm going to get to Luke 10 about the Good Samaritan. I know you're wondering that, because I wondered myself where would that going to fit. And the parable of the Good Samaritan is really about a lawyer saying, teacher, what shall I do to inherit eternal life? When I read the lawyer, I remember a nonprofit group that I worked with, social service agency, this was 30 years ago. And I used the word lawyer, and he says, we pronounce that liar where I come from. But the lawyer asked Jesus, you know, what shall I do? And then he goes through and recites about loving God with all your heart, your soul, your strength, with all your mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And what did Jesus say? You've answered rightly, do this, and you will live. But he wanted to justify himself, and who's my neighbor? Now we go through the story of the Good Samaritan. And after the story of the Good Samaritan, Jesus asked the lawyer, he said, which one of these people is the neighbor to the one that fell among thieves? And the lawyer said, well, the one who showed mercy on him, which would be the Samaritan. And Jesus says, go and do likewise. In other words, being a good neighbor. Well, who teaches empathy, seeing things from other people's point of view? Did any of those in the story of the Good Samaritan have empathy for the people, for the man who was beaten and robbed? It was a Samaritan who came along and exhibited the kind of empathy and the care that Jesus was referring to. Author Warren Farrell wrote a book, I'm going to say about 25 years ago, called Father and Child Reunion. And he did the research about well-functioning families, that both mother and father were needed to raise well-adjusted children. But the mother and father have separate roles. Specifically, the father generally teaches empathy by providing limits or the rules of respect for others. And by respecting the limits of others, then children learn empathy. Because if they don't respect themselves and their, for example, their own private property, they aren't going to respect the property of other people either. So they're not afraid to damage or hurt other people because they don't understand the value of limits. And as we heard in the sermonette, the Ten Commandments emphasize limits. And what is this? This is God the Father teaching empathy to each of us. Empathy at each stage of the game, teaching us what the limits in life are. And all the shall nots. Where is the edge? And what shall we do? As well as what shall we not do? So point number four was to respond to others with kindness, to imagine them, help us to imagine a better and more compassionate world. What was Jesus teaching his disciples? By extension, what was Jesus teaching the children? And what was he teaching us? Well, first off, to treat everyone as we would wish to be treated. Would we want to be pushed away as the children were pushed away by the disciples when they came to Jesus? I don't think so. Then, point 1A, once a subpoint, help those around us who are in need. The Bible speaks about taking care of our brothers and sisters, those are fellow believers who are in need, being willing to do that as we are able. We can't do everything for everybody, nor do we want to be facilitators for other people's mistakes. But we want to be able to help where we can. Point 1B, be willing to make amends when we cause another person pain. Sometimes it just happens. We don't do it on purpose, but it can happen. We have to be willing to make amends because that puts us on the path to reconciliation and healing. Point 2, what was Jesus teaching? Step into the shoes of others and see how things look from their point of view. How do you think the children were thinking when they were shooed away by the disciples? Back off, you know, not here, not now, or whatever. Well, they weren't too happy then, you suppose, with the people that was around Jesus. So Jesus had to correct them. And set the example, says, let them come to me. Point 3 was make our environment a place where everyone feels welcome. Well, if the children were rebuked once, do you think they would want to come back again knowing that they're going to get chased away? That would be pretty awkward. So Jesus was teaching at that point, let's make the believers feel welcome and those new who need that understanding to feel welcome. So that's why we welcome our guests, the new believers, as well as our little children. Point 4 was to respond to others with kindness. It doesn't cost anything to be kind. It's not a high price to pay. Sometimes it's hard to restrain ourselves because not everybody, we don't think everybody deserves the kindness, particularly when they're being difficult. But remember, a soft answer does turn away wrath. So it's up to us to each of us to learn how to teach empathy, because our children and other people's children learn from our examples. So it's up to us, then, to understand empathy, the ability to understand and share the feelings of others. It's up to us to recognize that empathy is the action of understanding, being aware or sensitive to and vicariously experiencing the feelings, thoughts, and experiences of another, whether it's in the past or in the present. In Matthew 18 and 19, the first two verses, sections, Jesus made it clear to the disciples, and then by extension, because it's in the book for each of us, that we must exercise empathy. And then when we do that, we are teaching our children values of honesty, respect, and compassion. And not only do these principles help our children and the generations to come, but we also receive then the benefits or the blessings from living according to God's law of love.